This is ESPN Radio.
Number three here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Get in touch with us on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Mike Golic Jr. and the birthday boy himself, Chris Canty, although it feels weird to say birthday boy considering he's a 39-year-old grown man.
Yeah, all the way grown out here in these streets. Can't even be considered a young man, Gojo. I am just a man. There is no adjective in front of that, so that's going to take a little bit of getting used to. But it is what it is, man. I'm holding on to my 30s by a thread. It's my last birthday in my 30s, so, you know, I'm getting close to that hill, brother. I can see it. I'm not on top of it where I can look over and down on the other side, but I can see the top of the hill. I'll just put it that way.
Yeah, getting up near it right now, but we can't also lose sight of the important facts in all this, too, because...
Hey, it's Scorpio season.
As Kendrick Perkins reminded us earlier, who also shares a birthday with Chris Canty today. So, happy Scorpio season, all who observe.
Absolutely. Absolutely. My Scorpio brother, and I feel like I'm going to have to observe that tonight with a little bit of cake, too. There has to be cake. There's nothing like a birthday celebration with a little bit of cake involved too, right?
Well,
you have
best,
to have that.
The best part about the birthday cake, Chris, is that you, in theory, if you're going to have, you know, the cake at your place of residence, get cake for breakfast the next day. Because no one ever finishes all of their birthday cake that night, and so you get to put it in the fridge, wake up that next day, pour yourself a tall glass of milk, and then enjoy cold fridge cake, which to me is one of the greatest luxuries mankind has to offer.
Oh, no question. So tonight it'll probably be cake a la mode, and then in the morning, because it'll already be overnight in the fridge, I get to have a little bit of that for breakfast. That seems like a winning game plan right there when we're breaking down how we're going to take down the birthday cake.
That's good, clean living right there. That's all you can ask. So happy birthday to Chris Canty. Happy birthday to Kendrick Perkins. This is ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance, with insurance for cars, homes, boats, motorcycles, RVs, and commercial vehicles at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. So we are in the midst of OBJ watch. We're getting to the point now, after he clears waivers on Tuesday, where Odell Beckham Jr., we're already starting to hear the information, the reports about where he'd like to end up. Diana Rossini, our ESPN NFL reporter, says that Odell is focusing in on three teams: the Kansas City Chiefs, the Green Bay Packers, and the New Orleans Saints. Keyshawn Johnson, co-host of Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max on ESPN Radio, believes that there is a clear best landing spot for OBJ.
I would say Green Bay. They've desperately been trying to develop a bona fide two opposite of Davante Adams, which he'll continue to be the main target. And then you got Randall Cobb, which is a slot guy. You got Alan Lazar, who can play in or out. I'd like Green Bay for him, to be honest with you. He'll fit in that locker room. He'll fit with those players. There won't be any animosity. There won't be issue. I like Green. Green Bay's a good one.
Unless you do something to Aaron Rodgers, then there could be.
Yeah, there's going to be a problem with that one. That's the thing. Like, you just don't know how that fit is going to go. And with the last two quarterbacks that Odell Beckham Jr. has played for, it's clear that he didn't necessarily feel the best, like they were on the best of terms before he ended up leaving those spots. So I know this is a different situation, and that Aaron Rodgers would be far better of a quarterback than he would have played with previously. But that being said, it's still, from a culture standpoint, from a personality standpoint, it's a risk that the Green Bay Packers are going to take. And if you're Matt LaFleur, you have to question whether or not you think that risk is worth it. So I get what Keyshawn is saying. If Odell is prioritizing playing on a contender, then that would be the clear-cut choice out of the three teams that he's narrowed it down to. But to me, if this is about not just this season, but what happens after this year, the place for him to go is Kansas City. I mean, playing for Pat Mahomes and playing for Andy Reid, that seems like it's the best fit. You can be that receiver opposite of Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce in that Sammy Watkins role. We've seen that position have success when they're competing for championships. It feels like there's more urgency with that organization based on where they are in the standings in their division and the AFC playoff picture. So there's a level of desperation that the Chiefs are going to have to make a move in order to flip their season in the second half and get it to go the way they want it to. So Odell, for a lot of different reasons, feels like it would be a fit in Kansas City, and it would be a change from the offense that he was coming out of, which was more run-centric. The Kansas City Chiefs are going to throw the ball all over the yard. There really is no semblance of a run game with them. Whether you think that's a good thing or a bad thing, they're going to trust it to Pat Mahomes, and he is going to drop back and throw that ball 35-plus times a game. You can guarantee that. You can book it. That means there's going to be opportunities for Odell Beckham to change the perception of who he is and where he's at in his career, prove that he can be a productive player so that he can set himself up to have the kind of offseason that he's looking for.
Yeah, Chris, and we look at that offense. You mentioned less reliant on the run game. It's also a little more free form, right? Like, that's what we feel Odell Beckham Jr., best known for some of those highlight reel plays back in his days with the New York Giants. You go to a place like the Cleveland Browns where you've got this time and rhythm offense here. Kevin Stefanski wants everyone running the route at this exact depth, at this exact time that Baker Mayfield can rely on. We see Pat Mahomes break contain and turn this thing into a free-for-all all the time. We see how important the scramble drill is there. We see that connection on display. And so I'm with you. I thought about this a lot yesterday, and I realized I was doing it from the team perspective, Chris, because Green Bay should be very incentivized to go and make this happen, right? For the price tag, for this season, making sure they do everything in their power to try and win here and now, because they don't know if tomorrow is promised with Aaron Rodgers. But if this is about Odell Beckham Jr., the name you mentioned, Andy Reid, should be the most important one in this conversation right after Patrick Mahomes, because him as a coach and the environment that he cultivates is the exact recipe for what Odell needs going forward as a player.
Yeah, it's player rehab, and then not to mention Andy Reid probably has the most decorated resume of the teams that we're talking about. I mean, if you want to say Sean Payton's in that conversation, go right ahead. But in terms of the amount of wins, Andy Reid has got 200-plus wins with two different franchises, not to mention the Super Bowl championship on his resume. So there's something to be said for a coach that's been able to get it done at that level. So I feel like from Odell's standpoint, it's not only just about the yards, but it's about rehabbing his image as well. And there's no better place to prove that you're a good teammate and a productive player like a place that has the kind of profile that Kansas City offers him.
Yeah, Andy Reid's operation has generally been one that provides second chances here. That's always something that's mattered to that coach. And while that usually is in reference to something that a player has gone through in their life off the field here, I still think it can apply to Odell Beckham Jr. because he is also, in addition to being decorated, Chris, one of the most respected coaches around the NFL, right? And I have to imagine, even if Odell's future ends up not being with Kansas City for whatever reason, and best case scenario if you're Odell, you end up around there. That is the young, hot new team here. I mean, just think about the fit in that locker room, Chris, with a guy like Patrick Mahomes as the quarterback here, Travis Kelce in that tight end room. Like, all the core of that team here are young players under contract for a while, very secure in their roles, who would be a very easy place from an ego standpoint to welcome Odell Beckham Jr. in and make him feel a part of that thing for the next however long he can do it.
Yeah, that's important, man. I mean, Odell has got to look at it from the long-term standpoint and what franchise puts him in the best position in order to accomplish his ultimate long-term objectives. And I feel like that's Kansas City more so than those other two spots. Now, if he decides that he's going to go to New Orleans, Mike, we know what that is. That's just about him being able to go back to a safe space, a place where we already know he's a made man down there in that Bayou area, the Third Coast. They love him. He played his college ball down there. That he went to high school down there. That's a safe space for him. We know that at that point, it's not necessarily about prioritizing the football, but just making sure that he's around, you know, his circle, his you know, people that are going to affirm him in that way. Whereas with Kansas City, it feels like that's more of a situation where you're setting yourself up to have the success that you're looking for on the field, becoming a productive receiver and proving to the rest of the NFL that you're not the problem child that the Cleveland Browns or the New York Giants have framed you up to be.
Yep, a lot on the plate for Odell Beckham Jr., but the teams we're talking about here are all really good teams in most seasons. We know the Kansas City Chiefs aren't doing great right now, so he's still got bidders in the right places that let you know exactly what we believe the perception is of his talent around the league. Odell Beckham Jr., again, according to Diana Russini, narrowing down the teams he would like to go to the Chiefs, the Packers, and the Saints. Coming up next, though, let's stick with the Packers and the penalty that the NFL has laid down for their star quarterback, and in his words, his misleading of certain folks along the way. Was it enough? We'll tell you why not next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And Chris, we've talked about it on the show. We've heard the phrase often in our lives. You're either coaching it or you're allowing it to happen, right? We hear that all the time relative to players and teams on that level. But I also think of it on the larger level, the macro level for like teams and leagues. Like the example I always go back to is in Major League Baseball, when you see a pitcher throw at a batter's head, throw at him something sideways, you get the fight started there. And then we see that pitcher suspended for 4 days, 5 days, not games. And so, all right, you're going to miss one start over the course of that maybe, and they're going to keep it moving. That, to me, always says, as a league, you're not all that concerned about getting guys to stop throwing at dudes at the plate here. That's exactly how I feel about how the Green Bay Packers and Aaron Rodgers got punished by the NFL. The league announced they were fining the Packers $300,000 and that they were fining Aaron Rodgers and Alan Lazard $14,650 each. That according to Rob Domowski. This going back to their violations of the joint COVID protocols based on the union and the NFL's agreement in this spot. Chris, all that number says to me is we only care so much about the fact that a star quarterback in this league said, I get to play by different rules than everybody else.
Yeah, we just want to find everybody that's involved in this thing so this story can go away. We're going to put our heads down, avoid listening to any of the criticism, and we know that something's going to happen in the news cycle to take everybody's attention away in, about 24 to 48 hours. That's what this screams to the NFL. This is not by any means a deterrent in terms of players in the future with violating COVID protocols, especially guys that are unvaccinated. So this is one of those things, in my opinion, where the NFL just gave Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers what amounts to a tap on the wrist just to say, hey, guys, we had to do something. We're not going to come down on you right now, even though we know you were blatant in your violation of these protocols because you allowed Aaron Rodgers to walk around the facility with no mask in the auditorium when he's addressing the media. And he actually went to a gathering with more than three players knowing that he was unvaccinated and that was against league rules. So typically you see the NFL when it comes to discipline, it escalates when you have repeat violations. And with Aaron Rodgers, we know for the last 2 months, he's been a repeat offender when it comes to being in violation of the protocols. And yet the NFL only fined him $14,650 for doing so. And it wasn't because they fined him because of going to the media without the mask. They fined him because he went to the Halloween party and he got caught up. Might have fined him for his John Wick costume, too. I'm not sure about that. But that's the thing. The NFL should have been more heavy-handed, if for no other reason, to send a message that we can't jeopardize the integrity of our season. We've got to protect ourselves from COVID, especially when we're talking about unvaccinated players.
Chris, the sad part is we probably should have seen this coming because, as we mentioned at the beginning, this was partially on the Packers for not policing this. This was certainly on Aaron Rodgers for being deceitful, but it was also on the NFL who, again, Aaron Rodgers came to the league, came to the NFLPA before the season, said, I want to try this alternate method and I want a petition to have it deemed that I am a vaccinated person despite the fact that I have not taken the COVID-19 vaccine. Everyone involved said no, which meant everyone knew what Aaron's vaccination status was or should have. Mm-hmm. Like, again, if it was either willingly ignoring it or actually not following up and knowing, then the NFL is also culpable in that. And the last thing they appear to want to do in this spot is admit that they've got any kind of blame in this, Chris. Because remember, when they came out, their PR with their statement early on is it is on the organizations in the NFL to monitor and police the COVID policies. They were making damn sure none of this was on them.
Yeah, but they can't pass the buck in this situation because ultimately it's about the NFL making sure that the teams around the league are doing the right things and adhering to those policies. Like if a team decided that they wanted to spend above the salary cap, the NFL wouldn't allow it and they'd come down on it. They would find out about it. That's something that the NFL would enforce. The same thing should happen when it comes to COVID. Like if you're going to be adamant about protecting competitive balance, you've also got to be adamant about protecting the integrity of the game, but you failed to do so in part because you're dealing with one of the stars in the league and you want this guy to be on the field as much as possible because he is one of the marquees, but also because Green Bay is one of the flagship franchises. You had a different set of rules when it came to the enforcement of your policy with this particular franchise, with this particular player, versus all the other players that happen to be unvaccinated in the National Football League. And with a global pandemic going on, I don't think that the NFL could afford to treat people differently when it comes to adhering to the protocols. That's the big issue that I have with this. The other big issue that I have with Aaron Rodgers is this half-hearted apology that we got yesterday on the Pat McAfee show. Like, I don't understand how he can try to say, if I misled people, I take full responsibility for that. To me, that doesn't sound like an apology, Gojo. I got a big issue with that. Also got a big issue with him saying, I'm not an activist, I'm an athlete, so I'm going to get back to doing what I do best. This is fresh off of what he said on the Pat McAfee show on Friday when he channeled Martin Luther King and saying that he had a moral obligation to challenge things that were unjust, i.e. the NFL's COVID policy. Like, I don't understand where Aaron Rodgers is with this thing, but it becomes painfully obvious to me that all of this came about because he didn't want to open himself up to the criticism in taking the position that he took and not wanting to get vaccinated, which is absolutely ridiculous.
You know what is interesting, though, is our reaction to this is largely because we're not used to this in this league, like a player being able to call their shots this differently on an issue like this. We saw this happen in the NBA, right? Like, we remember when LeBron James went to that tequila tasting party during the COVID times, and yep, nothing happened for that. LeBron James didn't end up getting suspended because, according to reports to our own Adrian Wojnarowski, the league believed that the violation, quote, the nature of the event didn't rise to a threat level of virus spread, which seemed like NBA for LeBron James did it, so we're not going to punish him. It felt weird at the time, and looking back on it now, it feels even weirder in light of us all sitting here and criticizing Aaron Rodgers. So this is something that we have seen, star players across leagues being treated differently. We just didn't think it would apply so loosely during a pandemic. But coming up next, as we shift our focus back to what's going on the field right now, Odell Beckham Jr. needs a new team. We have got a few in the running. We will try and see if we can figure out where he winds up, and we'll do it after this word from Wendy's. Now, right now at Wendy's, see what all the hype's about with our new guaranteed hot and crispy fries. We're talking real natural cut potatoes, perfectly sprinkled in sea salt, and guaranteed to be hot and crispy down to the very last fry, or we'll replace them. These aren't just the typical fries you add to a meal. These are fries worth adding a meal to. Abandon the old cold and soggy and head to Wendy's today, where your fries are guaranteed to be hot and crispy. At participating U.S. Wendy's, back after this, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. And guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline, Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We head there now to talk to ESPN NFL insider Adam Schefter, as there's a lot going on in the world of the NFL. Adam, do want to start on the more serious end of this. Minnesota Vikings running back Dalvin Cook was accused of assault, battery, and false imprisonment, according to a suit filed on Tuesday. He has come out through his attorney, David Valenti, saying that he believes that Dalvin Cook was assaulted and is now being extorted for millions of dollars here. There will be an ongoing investigation. Is there anything more at this time that you can tell us about this situation?
Well, what I would say is that it's being reviewed by the NFL under the personal conduct policy, and the league's monitoring developments, but there's no change to Dalvin Cook's status at this time because it's a civil complaint. And because it's a civil complaint, that doesn't trigger the commissioner exemplis, which means he was there today at practice. And again, it looks like he's on track to play while his ex-girlfriend is alleging that he physically abused her, caused a concussion, held her hostage. He alleges that he's the victim. There have been settlement discussions, but no agreement has been reached. We'll see where it goes.
Shefty, staying with Minnesota, we also got news today that Vikings guard Dakota Dozier is being hospitalized with COVID-19. What more can you tell us about that situation?
Well, it's obviously a troubling situation. The Vikings have had, I think it was 29 people that they're testing for close contacts while Dakota Dozier is hospitalized. He's not doing well with it. And I think, you know, it's just a reminder that the virus affects different people different ways. And again, it's a situation where they just hope he's okay, and they're hoping that he gets through this. But the fact that he's hospitalized and the condition he's in tells you, you know, that they're very concerned about him right now. And we'll see if and when he can get back to playing football.
very scary situation there, no doubt, that we'll continue to monitor. Certainly hope the best for Dakota and for the Vikings. Anyone in that situation right now, as we're talking to Adam Schefter, our ESPN NFL insider. Adam, switching gears a bit, we know now after clearing waivers Tuesday, Odell Beckham Jr.'s future, the one hanging in the balance. We saw the report from Diana Rossini about the Chiefs, Packers, and Saints being teams that OBJ is interested in here. Have you heard of any other teams that may be involved in the Odell Beckham sweepstakes?
Well, again, I think that I think the Seahawks, the Patriots, I mean, there have been conversations with other teams. You know, the teams that Diana mentioned that he was honing in on were the Packers and Saints and the Chiefs. And so he's going through that right now. And look, he wants to be in a winning environment and wants to be in a situation where he's got a good quarterback. And, of course, you know, I don't think money is irrelevant. All those things will be a part of the decision, which could come tonight. It could come tomorrow. It could come any moment now, literally. We're waiting for that decision as we speak. And so we'll see what he decides to do. But I think it'll be one of those few handful of teams while other teams are circling around trying to see if there's a way to lure him to their particular city. You know, it's the first time that he is a free agent, right? The Giants drafted him. The Giants traded him to Cleveland. He didn't have a say over going to New York or Cleveland. And now that he's clear, he can pick where he wants to go. So he's going through that process, and I certainly expect it to be done before Saturday, because if he's not on the roster Saturday, then he won't get paid for this week, and there's no reason to not get paid for a week in which you could have that decision done. Therefore, I think he'll have the decision at some point this week.
Shefty, after doing their due diligence, the NFL issued discipline toward the Green Bay Packers and Aaron Rodgers, fining the player $14,650 for violating COVID-19 protocols, and the team was issued a fine of $300,000. How did the NFL settle on this being the exact level of discipline that they wanted to enact on these two entities?
Yeah, well, I think if you go back and look at the fines and punishments that the league has doled out to other teams, it's consistent with them. But this particular situation seemed to generate more interest and curiosity and attention than any other case. And I think because of that, a lot of people around the league are disappointed. They felt like it should have been more severe. Other teams have complained, because I know that the league sent memos to certain teams about unvaccinated players being masked, and Aaron Rodgers, unvaccinated, wasn't masked. The press conferences the league went through, looked at the Halloween party where people were, and it's a situation where, in the end, the league said, we're going to fine you $300, we're going to fine the individuals that amount. If this sort of thing happens again, we reserve the right to take away draft picks, flop draft positions, whatever it may be. So, again, it's just a continuation of the situation that the league is monitored, and the league felt like this was the right punishment.
And so that punishment handed down for Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers, hopefully putting an end to this saga, at least for the time being here. Adam, we always appreciate the time and the information. We will talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Have a good
Adam Schefter, our ESPN NFL insider, kind enough to join us on the Goodyear hotline here. And Chris, I think that is worth noting about Odell Beckham Jr. here. It's going to get done in a timely fashion, but it is interesting, this notion of choice here. When we heard New Orleans brought up in all of this alongside Kansas City and Green Bay reported by Diana, it kind of piqued my interest, because while they're currently a playoff team right now, we're talking about Trevor Siemian or Taysom Hill as your quarterback for the rest of the season. It didn't exactly seem like the most fertile grounds for that, but for a place he knows, for an organization that could be very beneficial to him, it reminds you that he does have a say in this for the first time.
No question about it, and so he's going to take full advantage of it, and we'll see where it goes. The one thing I will say from an X's and O's standpoint with New Orleans is they are dead last in explosive passing plays, meaning passing plays over 20 yards. And so I don't necessarily know if that's the place where Odell needs to go to pump up his value and to change the perception in terms of what stage he's at in his career around NFL circles. That'll be the interesting part to see. Again, I think if he were to go to the New Orleans Saints, it will be a lot more about the comfort that's around him and being close to family and friends than it would be about what's happening on the football field, even though the Saints are a contending team. You got to realize the formula for the Saints is not all that dissimilar from the formula for the Cleveland Browns. They want to run the football, and they want to play good defense. That's what it is. You would think that Odell would want to go to an offense that's much more pass-centric. That's why Kansas City and Green Bay, from our perspective, makes the most sense out of the three options.
Yeah, I'm sure if he wanted to talk himself into it, though, Chris, you can say that that New Orleans playbook does have a lot of plays in it, hold over from the last couple of years, to get a true number one receiver the ball. There's been no Michael Thomas on the field for that team. They haven't had a true number one in that spot. And so if you're Odell Beckham Jr., I'm sure there could be part of you that if that was a place that you were really married to for a lot of those other reasons, you could say there are plenty of targets in that offense that aren't going toward the true number one that I can fill that hole.
That's fair, but who's throwing you the football too? I think that becomes the other question. Trevor Siemian and Taysom Hill, that doesn't necessarily invoke a lot of confidence if I were a receiver trying to put myself in the best position to get the kind of production that most folks expect the number one receiver to have.
That's going to be the interesting part of all of this is, again, how much that choice weighs in. But one thing Adam Schefter said that is absolutely true is he's not going to miss out on a payday this week. And so this is going to be done here in the next couple of days as we wait to see where Odell heads next. Coming up next, though, watching a Hall of Famer go out bad to sell a book. Since when is being one of the 50 best players to ever play your sport suddenly not enough? We'll get to it next here on ESPN Radio. Canty and Gold Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline. We'll talk to Trevor Maddich, our ESPN college football analyst, see if he can make sense of whatever the hell committee was trying to do last night. Because as far as I'm concerned, Chris, I've just given up on it here. I cannot assign logic and reason to this, and so I'm going to hope that Trevor can make sense of all this.
Listen, Gojo, don't let Gary Barta and the committee steal your joy, man. Don't let them do that to you. I know you feel a way about Michigan being ahead of Michigan State, but I'm going to need for you to let that go. You said it yourself. It's going to all work itself out. The head-to-head matters when it comes to the conference title game. So just relax. Take a step back. Take a deep breath. Know it's going to get sorted out. Even though you got an issue with it, it's going to be handled.
You know what, Chris, that's a great point here is I have prided myself on reminding people that none of this has to be that serious, and I finally got mad online last night and in real life over something they did. So apparently college football playoff news comes for everyone at some point. It'll come for Trevor Maddich here in about 10 minutes. But before we get to that, man, speaking of clearly being bothered, Scottie Pippen is still talking. And it is amazing to me, Scottie Pippen, who we know has a book coming out, I think tomorrow, has been promoting a whiskey in the last year. All these different things have led to this. He was talking to Frank Isola, I believe on Sirius XM radio. And Frank Isola asked Pippen about his Game 6 return that wasn't talked about enough in his eyes. He talked about having a bad back in that game, having to get cortisone shots, all these different things, and used it as a chance to take a shot at Michael Jordan's flu game. Chris, this is making me really sad as it goes along here because I will say everyone points to it and says, oh, well, you know, he's trying to promote a book. None of this makes me want to buy a book more. It just makes me wonder what's gone so wrong for Scottie Pippen that we're resorting to this now.
Yeah, it sounds like Scottie is just salty, and I don't understand why he wants to compare the back game and the issue that he had in the NBA Finals to the flu game. I don't understand how that those two are the same thing. In the game that Scottie's talking about where he had the bad back, he scored 8 points. Michael Jordan dropped 30-plus in the flu game.
Right.
So it's not the same thing. The two are not equal. So I don't understand exactly where he's going with that. Now, I get it. Scottie Pippen not necessarily feeling like he was portrayed in the best of lights when it comes to The Last Dance. But facts are facts, man. I mean, when Michael Jordan stepped away from the team and he had that team in the Game 7 in the playoffs, he decided that he wasn't going to go back into the game after Phil Jackson drew up the last shot for Tony Kukoc. That was a Scottie Pippen decision, not a Michael Jordan decision, not anybody else. And so the fact that he handled himself in that way, when we start talking about competitive greatness, when we start talking about the best to ever do it, that part for Scottie Pippen is going to be hard to get up off the mat, especially when you're comparing yourself to somebody who past players, present players, and then future players all acknowledge as the greatest of all time.
Right. Like, comparison is the thief of joy is something that we often say.
True story.
But especially when you are almost unanimously considered a top 50 NBA player of all time, one of the best wing defenders of all time, the second best player on what is the best dynasty in modern professional basketball here. Like, Chris, it must be really something personal with that, or maybe Scotty just really wants to believe he can do content better than Michael, because I don't understand what the point of all of this is. His book came out yesterday, Unguarded. Like, you're not going to win that either, Scotty. Number one, you're talking about doing written word versus something like The Last Dance, which we could all watch. You're always going to lose out of that. People don't read books as much anymore. But number two, we also did that in the middle of a global pandemic. Like, Chris, I was doing morning radio back then. You were doing radio back then. If Scotty's book had come out during the pandemic, we'd have treated every chapter like it was a live game being played. We'd have done a damn book club for that thing, because Lord knows we treated every episode of The Last Dance like it was a live sporting event. You're just not going to win this, and so trying, if it makes you a few extra bucks, great, but man, it seems to be really sullying a legacy here on the way out.
Listen, if LeBron James's play on the court over the past couple of decades can't knock Michael Jordan from that mountaintop, you think a book that Scottie Pippen comes out with the year after Jordan drops The Last Dance documentary is going to do that? It's not going to happen. There's nothing that Scottie Pippen can say about Michael Jordan in that book that's going to change our views on Michael Jordan. Now, what I will say is this. Scottie Pippen has got to be content in being the best Robin in the history of the NBA to the best Batman that there ever was. Just be cool with that. But right now, what he's doing, it just sounds like sour grapes, and I'm not understanding why Scottie Pippen can't just enjoy being a key cog in what is one of the greatest dynasties of all time. Let's also remember this. Like, Michael Jordan, when it came to what he was before Scottie Pippen got there, in those seasons, those five seasons before that, he was under 500 in all of those seasons. So Scottie Pippen being on that team clearly made a difference. It clearly elevated the play of everybody around him, and it had a positive impact on Michael Jordan and what the ceiling in terms of team success would ultimately end up being. So that's the part that I don't understand with Scottie Pippen. It's not that people don't value you. People recognize that you're one of the greatest basketball players of all time. You're a Hall of Famer, top 50 player. So I don't understand why you feel like you continuously need to attack Michael Jordan's legacy in order to enhance your own. I don't think it works like that, and it comes off making you look a little bit weak.
Well, Chris, it's also just a bad job of sizing up your opponent, right? Like, this isn't a fight you're going to win. I understand that Michael Jordan technically struck first. Like, we know The Last Dance had plenty of people feeling some type of way. I mean, hell, Isaiah Thomas caught it bad in that one here. Jerry Krause, who is no longer with us, got it probably worse than anyone in that documentary, being painted as the villain that basically destroyed that entire dynasty here. And so Scottie certainly had something in that, but at the end of the day, you got to remember, you're going up against an institution, right? Like, whether you believe it's right, wrong, or indifferent, Michael Jordan is a part of the fabric of all of this here. You're not going to carve that out here with a book.
No, that's not going to happen. So just let it go, Scotty. Let it go. It's over with. And it's okay. Like, you're not going to win when it comes to the conversation of who was more integral in their team's success, whether it was Michael Jordan or Scottie Pippen. There's no argument. It is Michael Jordan. Just be content knowing that you were the second best player, the second most important player on a team that ended up winning six championships over, what, an eight-year span? Just be content in that. I don't understand why he can't just live in that, knowing that that's his legacy. I don't know why he feels like he's got to write a book trying to take shots at everybody else. The shots that were taken at him in The Last Dance, feels like he opened himself up to that kind of criticism by some of the decisions that he made. That's not on anybody else. That's on him.
Yeah, that does feel like a hit dog kind of hollering there when that all comes and that's at the center of it. But again, it kind of bums you out, because this is certainly a guy who's also been a fixture around the NBA for a long time with the kind of reputation that Scottie Pippen has. But this isn't about Scottie Pippen anymore. Let's turn our attention back to the real culprit in things here. The College Football Playoff Committee's second round of rankings from last night. Next.